This podcast is made possible by thousands of dedicated listeners just like you. Be a part of this powerful three-decade legacy of evangelization by visiting materdeiradio.com or downloading the Hail Mary Media app. And thank you for joining us on the bridge between your faith and everyday life.
The Holy Spirit continues to set hearts on fire with the love of Christ and inspire people to bring the good news to a world that is aching to hear it. Welcome to Blazing the Trail, a weekly show dedicated to the church's mission of evangelization. Now, here's your guide on this grand adventure, Catholic singer, songwriter, author, and speaker, Miriam Marston.
And welcome back to Blazing the Trail here on Mater Dei Radio. My name is Miriam Marston, and I'm grateful to have this time with you each week as we continue to explore the Church's mission of evangelization. And this mission has been absolutely central to the entire history of the Catholic Church. And my guest this week, Dr. Bronwyn McShay, helps us take a closer look at this history through the stories of Catholic women across the ages. Her latest book, Women of the Church, What Every Catholic Should Know, presents us with a wide range of historical figures, from women such as Teresa of Avila, who were saintly reformers, to those who were not quite so saintly, but were nevertheless very influential. And Dr. McShay has also aspired to bring us stories of women who may be less known, yet whose faithful efforts were part of the incredible movements of ministry and evangelization happening around the world for the last 2,000 years. To help us get started with this episode, I thought I would enlist the help of one of those influential women, St. Hildegard of Bingen, a 12th century saint who was declared a doctor of the church by Pope Benedict XVI. I was introduced to St. Hildegard many years ago, and among her many talents and charisms was her remarkable musical ability. Her music is really unlike anything else out there. So I thought I'd share one of her compositions with you all. And I find that with her music, it's best just to close your eyes, unless you're driving, of course, and let yourself be carried by the melody. And perhaps in doing so, to reflect with gratitude on how the Holy Spirit has worked through the ages to carry the mission of evangelization forward so that the truth and beauty of the good news could reach and convert the hearts of countless people. And after the song, I'll share my conversation with Dr. Bronwyn McShay as she offers some of her thoughts on how women have been key to shaping the life of the Catholic Church.
Thank you.
I'm joined by Dr. Bronwyn McShay, who is a historian based in New York City. She has authored several books and is currently teaching for the Augustine Institute in Denver. Bronwyn, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm very well, Miriam. Great to be on the show.
So I look forward to hearing more about your new book, which is coming out in April of 2024, and what inspired you to dive into this topic of women in the church. But I want to look a little bit at the road that led you here. What sparked your love of history, and where did that start to intersect with your Catholic faith?
Sure. Well, I grew up in a devout Catholic home, a sort of working class environment. My parents had numerous books in our house when I was growing up. And many of them were history books. I just grew up with an interest in the past that was kind of, it sort of preexisted my ability to understand why I cared about it. So I just sort of, when I went to college, I went to Harvard, and I just knew right away I would major in history without any clear sense of direction. I just wanted to do that. And then I thought I was going to become a lawyer.
Okay.
And then I had two professors in my life there kind of hinted that maybe I could, you know, have a career in history if I wanted to consider graduate school. So I ended up, I went down that path, but it didn't really intersect with my Catholic faith in a strong way until I completed a master's first in religious studies. I sort of hesitated to go into a doctoral program. And so I ended up, fairly certain by the time I was applying to graduate school that I wanted to do the history of Catholicism in some way or another. Yeah. And I was able to do that wonderfully at Yale University with Carlos Ayer, the author of a number of books. And so so my past converging with Dr. Ayer's was really fortuitous for me.
Awesome. So. Yeah. When you speak of the history of Catholicism, are you looking at it broadly or did you want to zero in on any particular eras?
Well, I specialize in the early modern period, so roughly the mid-15th century through the French Revolutionary period into the early 19th were sort of my teaching fields had to do with early modern history. And that period just especially fascinated me, partly because I wanted to get into the story of early colonial missions in North America, the sort of Catholic story of North America. I grew up with a very Anglo-Protestant sense of who was here in the 17th and 18th century. And so I did my dissertation on Jesuit missionaries from France in North America, including Isaac Jogues and other martyrs. And I guess the history of Catholicism as a field has kind of subfields in terms of their, you know, early modern is a rather vibrant area of research. So I just sort of stumbled into it.
That's great. Doesn't that happen a lot though?
Yeah.
Well, and Bronwyn, so now your book, Women of the Church, it's actually part of a series from the Augustine Institute called What Every Catholic Should Know. So what do you think Catholics should know about women of the church? What role have women played in the development of Catholic traditions and institutions? And I'll be curious to hear how your research and conclusions might contrast maybe with some of the prevailing ideas or perceptions of the role women have played in the history of the church.
Sure. Well, I should explain. So the book, the series is co-published with Ignatius Press and Augustine Institute, and they work together. And I can answer this question by explaining how the book came about.
Yeah.
When I was hired by the Augustine Institute, I was asked to potentially teach a course on the history of women in the church. And so I developed lectures and spoke to students. Yeah. And I realized in the process of writing these lectures how much knowledge I had partly from graduate school and my reading and research I'd been doing into the history of Catholicism that was kind of much broader than the history of famous saints and were things that I thought every Catholic should know. So in addition to very well-known saints, such as the four women doctors of the church or St. Joan of Arc or other very famous figures like Dorothy Day in modern times, I wanted to include kind of representative sampling of important Catholic women in every age from every vocation and bring in sort of what scholars know about these things in addition to the more well-trodden areas of knowledge that Catholics maybe culturally have a sense of through Lives of the Saints books and certain iconic figures. So, and as an exercise, the course naturally sort of grew into this book, I should say.
Okay.
And
okay,
the book is a bit more expansive than the course, and so I say in the preface to the book that I wish I had known about more of these women when I was young and Catholic growing up, because most of the heroes of the faith that I were drawn to, partly because of their dynamic human qualities, were male saints. Nothing wrong with that. But like Thomas More, Augustine of Hippo, I encountered figures like Teresa of Avila in her autobiography in graduate school. And I just wanted to save, I have a number of nieces and other, I know other young women in my life. I wanted to save them time. Like, no, people shouldn't, Catholics should not have to go through graduate school at Yale in order to encounter some of these women
sure.
who are part of their heritage as Catholics.
To that second part of the question, so you were taking a deep dive into the women of the church, maybe finding some surprising stories. And what did you find that really, again, might have contrasted with what people might already have in mind with the role that women played in the church?
Right. Well, there's kind of it's based on grains of truth. There's a general impression that before the 20th century, maybe, women had no voice in the church. They had very few opportunities to do anything except become, nothing wrong with this, wives and mothers living a very private domestic life, or enter a religious order, living also private, quiet domestic life. And many Catholic women did that over the centuries. But there's also a tremendous legacy. I mean, women were involved in colonial missions as early as the late 16th, early 17th century. They were, in the 19th century, foundresses of hospitals, schools, some of the largest what we would consider sort of nonprofit kind of organizations that the world had ever seen. In some places, they were competent businesswomen, some of them. They're exceptional figures, but I think they're important for all Catholics to know. Some of the royal women that I cover, who are not saintly in every case, sometimes the opposite of saintly, but I think every Catholic should know about them, such as the Empress Irene of Athens, who called together the Second Council of Nicaea. I was blown away to learn that a woman called together one of the early councils of the church, and and doing so helped settle the iconoclasm controversy. She also was keeping her son off the throne at the time and had him punished for his support of the iconoclasts. So we don't necessarily want to emulate her the way she dealt with her son. Isabella of Spain, Maria Theresa of Austria, these are some of the most powerful Catholic women in history. And their story belongs in the narrative. So I kind of basically tell the history of the church, including in its relationship to culture and political life, through stories of women. And it's surprising how much of the church's history you can cover doing that. So that was sort of the creative experiment I had as a historian to try to do that.
That's cool. Does that mean that in the book you really kind of cover the whole arc of church history?
Yeah.
Okay. So how early, what's the earliest figure that you focus on?
Well, I begin the book with the Blessed Mother at the foot of the cross, which is in a way partly a founding moment for the church, because that's when Christ entrusts St. John to her as her son and her to St. John as his mother. So she's becoming kind of mother of the apostles, mother of the church in that moment, right? So the book is divided into six chapters, one on early Christianity, one on medieval Christianity, one on Renaissance, Reformation era, one on kind of Enlightenment, revolutionary times, then 19th century, then 20th century. And so it's really all the eras of the church's history and what I think are the most representative or instructive examples. There's going to be people in there that maybe favorite people that some readers may not find them, but I discuss over 360 individual women or groups of women. So I hope if that happens, I'll be forgiven. Because I tried to tell as many stories as possible while still having kind of a thread of discussion in each section of the book.
Yeah.
So.
Now, for those who are just tuning in, I'm speaking with Dr. Bronwyn McShay. She's a historian based in New York City. She's authored several books and is currently teaching for the Augustine Institute in Denver. And we're discussing your new book, Bronwyn. So what kind of audience do you have in mind with the book?
Sure. Well, it's because it's part of the series, What Every Catholic Should Know. It's really intended for a general primarily Catholic readership.
Okay.
I wrote it freely with a Catholic voice. Normally my work is very academic and I stand apart, but I speak in kind of prayerful ways occasionally, like in the beginning and the end. So I don't sort of hide my Catholic piety in the book. So it's going to be more palatable to, I think, Catholics who believe the same thing about Mary's role and things like that. But then at the very same time, I present as full a picture as I can in 60,000 words, you know, showing some of the darker sides of history, as well as the more inspirational moments and where some of these female figures fall in that story.
Yeah. Picking up with that, who, and I want our listeners to actually get the book and read it. So I don't want you to give too much away, but who might you be particularly excited about sharing information about that, you know, your audience might not have known much about?
I would say, I mean, there's so many that I just became more fascinated with as I was writing. I mean, I already mentioned Empress Irene of Athens, not to kind of harp on this woman who was a tough, really tough ruler, but, I have a section on St. Hildegard of Bingen, who is the earliest in time of the four women doctors of the church. Pope Benedict declared her to be a doctor of the church in 2010. So she's sort of the least familiar in some ways of the four women doctors. Mm-hmm. And I explain some of the reasons why she was elevated in that way. Her theological writings were proved by Pope Eugene III in early medieval times she lived in. And let's see, some of the later figures. I just to get a shameless plug for my last book, I wrote a book called La Duchesse, The Life of Marie de Vignerot. It's about the niece and heiress of Cardinal Richelieu. She was a tremendous patroness of Catholic enterprises in 17th century France. She's in there, and this group of remarkable French women of the 17th century who were part of this French Catholic renewal going on in the wake of the Council of Trent. And she was friends with St. Louise de Marillac, who worked with St. Vincent de Paul to start the Daughters of Charity while he was starting the Congregation of the Mission. And so some of the earliest groups of sisters that were devoted to charitable work, sort of semi-contemplative, semi-active. I mean, there's so many different figures. I like so many things about each of them that it's hard to
pick one. Was there anyone from among those who you thought you might have known fairly well, but you learned some things that kind of surprised you about maybe some well-known figures?
I mean, I was surprised by this earlier on, maybe than while I was writing, but someone like Teresa of Avila, right? She's also a doctor of the church, reformed the Carmelite order. She faced a lot of opposition in her lifetime. There were Spanish ecclesiastical authorities. So church authorities actually were not all happy with St. Teresa of Avila, of all people, in her lifetime. She got tremendous support from the King of Spain, some of the Jesuits in Spain, and some churchmen. She had support from Rome, but she was actually silenced for a while. Her writings, most of them, were not published till after she died. And so kind of just showing some of the struggles and the sense of even some of the most accomplished saints that we look up to and, you know, admire so much, they actually had a lot of moments in their lives that probably made them doubt whether what they were doing was going to be fruitful, you know. And so just showing their sort of real time experiences they lived through, including some of the difficulties they experienced even within the church while trying to help the church in major ways. So so that would be an example.
You note 360 different names. Do they come from all over the world, Bronwyn?
They do. I tried to be as global as possible without kind of straying into too much territory where the research is still too new for me to kind of synthesize other scholars' work. So I do get into the development of the global church. When I talk about the church in the United States in the 19th and early 20th century, I cover various African-American Catholic women who were not allowed to join some of the major orders in the era of segregation, and several of whom are up for canonization. potentially at some point. And so I cover, I try to represent, you know, Native American women like Sankateria Tekagwitha and some others. And I refer to other women who whose names are not as well preserved, but I refer to them as groups.
Yeah.
And the development of the church in Africa and Asia. But again, it's kind of because I'm trying to cover the whole history and I'm dependent on other historians' work for the areas in which I'm not an expert. I didn't want to kind of present too many women from the global church that I felt like I can't speak in any authoritative way about that. So I'm hopeful the book will be used as a way to kind of encourage people to do more reading and to find out what else is out there.
And I imagine just so many of them are unique in their own way. Were there any patterns you saw, sort of some overarching themes in the stories of the women that you researched?
I'm a lay woman, right? I'm not consecrated. And I went into the project wanting to represent as many lay female figures in the church's history as I could. And there are many, many of them in there. At the same time, even though I had a kind of healthy respect for this to begin with, the witness and the legacy of consecrated women, whether cloistered nuns, semi-contemplative congregations that really began to have their heyday in 17th, 18th century, the work they did in the 19th century to kind of figures like Mother Frances Cabrini, you know, with the founding of hospitals and schools in very difficult settings. I was surprised how strongly the witness of these women affected me. And I guess because, you know, we're from a generation that did not grow up with that many nuns around us the way certainly my parents did grew up. They knew a lot of nuns in a way that I didn't. Yeah. So it was sort of opaque for me. I had kind of maybe some stereotypes about that, that the history of consecrated women really, kind of blew me away, frankly, as I was weaving together the narrative. And they ended up having a more central role than I even wanted to give them initially. So, because I just couldn't help it. They deserved it.
Basically. Yeah. I have to ask, is there anyone from New York City?
Well, there's St. Elizabeth Ann Seton.
Okay.
American convert. Technically, she's from the Midwest, but Dorothy Day spent a lot of her life in New York. She started the Catholic Worker in New York. Those are the two that stand out.
Yeah.
That are genuine New Yorkers. So,
well, Bronwyn, give us some details about the book. When is it going to be released and where can our listeners learn more?
Sure. So the book is officially out April 1st.
Okay.
It's being sold both by Ignatius Press, which is selling the paperback only. So Ignatius.com, you can buy the paperback, you can pre-order. The Augustine Institute has their Catholic market, Catholic.market, has a lot of information about the book there and the rest of the series it's part of. And they have the hardcover and the paperback. It's also, I don't like to promote Amazon, but you can get it on Amazon and other booksellers as well. And I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram. So I'm the only Bronwyn McShay that I know of. So if you see two on one of these apps, tell me, because there should not be two. So
good to know. Well, that's great. We'll make sure to link to that information with the show. Bronwyn, thank you so much for your time today. And thanks for all hard work you put to bring this book and these important topics to life. Thank you so much and God bless.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on the show, Miriam.
Dr. McShay mentioned that she opens her book on women of the church with the figure of the Virgin Mary, and that's where I'd like to wrap up this episode, in reference to the Blessed Mother. In his 1987 encyclical Redemptoris Mater, Pope St. John Paul II wrote, "Here I simply wish to note that the figure of Mary of Nazareth sheds light on womanhood as such by the very fact that God, in the sublime event of the incarnation of his Son, entrusted himself to the ministry, the free and active ministry of a woman. It can thus be said that women, by looking to Mary, find in her the secret of living their femininity with dignity and of achieving their own true advancement. In the light of Mary, the Church sees in the face of women the reflection of a beauty which mirrors the loftiest sentiments of which the human heart is capable, the self-offering totality of love, the strength that is capable of bearing the greatest sorrows, limitless fidelity and tireless devotion to work, the ability to combine penetrating intuition with words of support and encouragement. And in his 1988 apostolic letter on the dignity and vocation of women, the late Pope writes, "The Church gives thanks for all the manifestations of the feminine genius which have appeared in the course of history, in the midst of all peoples and nations. She gives thanks for all the charisms which the Holy Spirit distributes to women in the history of the people of God, for all the victories which she owes to their faith, hope, and charity." Thank you so much for tuning in. Again, my name is Miriam Marston, and I hope you'll join me next time as we reflect on how the Holy Spirit continues to inspire and equip disciples to share the love of God with others. Until then, stay well and stay close to Christ. God bless you all.
You've been listening to Blazing the Trail, a weekly show dedicated to the Church's mission of evangelization. For more information on Miriam Marston and her work, plus an archive of our past shows, visit us online at MatreDayRadio.com or download the Hail Mary Media app. Blazing the Trail is produced at the studios of Mater Dei Radio in Portland, Oregon.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider sharing it with a friend. You can support this vital mission of evangelization through MatreDayRadio.com or the Hail Mary Media app. And thank you for helping us lead souls to Jesus through the Blessed Virgin Mary.